Accession number 30638, Mr. Peter Wayne, Rear One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Wayne?
I was born in May 1920.
What date?
On the 8th of May 1920 in Berlin.
And could you tell us a little about your family background? Because Peter Wayne, although it's your name now, it wasn't your name there. Could you fill in the family background and your old name, if you see what
you mean? Yes, my old name was Hans Dieter Wolf, W-O-L-F-F. And my father was Jewish, although he came from a very liberal family. My grandfather was Emil Wolf, who was connected, like most of my grand uncles and aunts, with the Berlin music world. My great aunt was Luise Wolf, who was called Queen Luise because she actually not only managed but was the doyen of Berlin musical life from the beginning of the 20th century, even before, until the advent, till 1934, when the Nazis actually closed down the concert agency which she ruled over. My father was in the war of 1914-18.
Now, did he ever speak about it? What do you know about his war service?
Yes, he did. My father served in what was East Prussia and Poland with the German infantry regiment. He was a non-commissioned officer, and as far as I know, he was in the cavalry. For part because there were photographs of him on a horse on many occasions. He returned, he was born in 1880, so when the First World War finished, he was already 38 years old. He returned to Berlin, where he caught the Spanish flu, which killed more, I understand, people than the whole of the war. He had studied at the Berlin College of Art and qualified as a sculptor. He then took up photography as a special subject. And I understand during the last part of the war, he interpreted aerial photographs, which must have been very primitive at that time, to see the effect of the bombing of French towns. I remember vividly that we had an apartment, a pleasant, nice apartment in Berlin where I was born and my brother was born, in which my parents actually occupied until, my father occupied until 1942.
Now, what was he doing in civilian life? What was his profession?
He had opened, after returning from the war, recovering from this awful flu, he started a photographic studio. In fact, he had two studios, and that was in 1919. He had quite a reputation as being a good artist as well as photographer, because color photography had not been invented, and he used to, at that time, do the coloring himself. He had several pupils. One of them was my mother, who was very much younger than he, in fact 20 years younger, and she was apprenticed to him, and whenever he was out from one of the studios to go to the other one, my mother was left in charge, and the result was that a lot of the clients who came and wanted to be photographed, when the negatives were developed, they were either headless or footless. My father then decided that that was not a career for this girl called Lily Wallerstein, and he very wisely decided to marry her.
So the photographic studios were doing quite well then?
They were doing well. I remember he had some very eminent, sorry, I mustn't use the word victim, well, customers. One of them was King Amanullah of Afghanistan. And Afghanistan being nowadays in the news, it was amazing. He came on a state visit. My father had to photograph him. There were other amusing episodes, which I don't want to bore you with, but one of them was that on one day a lady came and asked whether he would photograph a carcass, and he sent, but she wanted my father to do it, so he sent his assistants out of the room, and the lady produced two candlesticks, and out of a handbag, big handbag, produced a dead chicken. And my father had to photograph it because she was so attached to that particular, to that chicken. He then developed certain color processes in connection with Agfa, and also and business then recovered quite well in the early 1920s when I was a child. And went to.
What was life like in the apartment living? Where was it?
The apartment is still still there today. It consisted of three bedrooms and a lounge dining room and another room which was called the bibliothèque, which means where all the books were. And it was very comfortable. It had central heating, and it was in a good part of Berlin, not far from the Kurfürstendamm. There was a beautiful park opposite where my mother always took me, and I actually played in the sandpit with the daughter of Marlene Dietrich. My mother actually went to school with Marlene Dietrich, and we had some connection with that family whilst she, Marlene Dietrich, was in Berlin. She emigrated, of course, very soon to America after the advent of Nazis.
Now, tell me about your education, the various stages.
Yes, I went to, like all German boys and girls, to a primary school which was strictly separated from boys and girls, which was around the corner from where we lived. I walked there, well, not at the age of six, but as soon as I was seven or eight. In those days, you were quite safe, and my parents sort of just, they didn't have to bring me and fetch me. It was a pleasant school and a very mixed school, in the sense you had children from all walks of life, which was very interesting to me, because at lunchtime I acquired the friendship of a little boy whose father was a dustman, and he had sandwiches. I remember that distinctly. He had sandwiches with something called lard on it, and whereas I had strawberry jam on them. We used to swap these sandwiches because he preferred mine, I preferred his. It was the beginning of a friendship of sorts, but we were children. We were well taught, well disciplined, and I do remember with some pleasure those early primary school days.
Now, how long would you be there? You'd go from...
Yes, until the age of 10. Then you had to take an exam for the what is called the gymnasium, which is secondary school. I then went to the Goetheschule, or Goethe-Gymnasium, which was called Reform Real Gymnasium. It was not humanistic, but we did have Latin and French as our first languages. I did regret it later on, because when I came to England, I only had 1 year of English. However, my Latin and my French helped to some degree.
And what was the school like? What do you remember of your education there at the gymnasium?
Well, I was 10. This was be 1930. The first, it was a very mixed school. There were, because it was situated more to the west of Berlin, to Charlottenburg district, there were quite a few Jewish boys there. And I became friendly with both, of course, with the Jewish boys, where we had a certain affinity, and also with the others. There is one particular boy whom I still speak to, visit. He is my contemporary. He is a retired psychiatrist. He's also 88 years old now. And he was, and his parents were great, were very sort of violent anti-Nazis. His mother almost was sent to a concentration camp. He had a very successful medical career and worked for the Senate in Berlin and was very, very helpful in obtaining, by giving certificates for ex-refugees, by getting restitution claims settled quickly and promptly for these people.
Now, before we go, can we have a little look at how Jewish the family was, because you said you
yes.
were...
Yes, my father was Jewish, and he was one of five children. His mother died at the age of 34, and if I may use that horrible term racially, he was 100% Jewish, albeit very liberal Jewish. I can't remember. I did go to synagogue once with him, because I had an aunt, one of his sisters, who actually sang in the choir. That should explain to you that it couldn't have been a very Orthodox synagogue, because they had a proper choir with an organ and all that. And he used to... we had an enormous amount of Jewish and non-Jewish friends. And when there were the so-called holy day, like New Year, I heard my father say Ashono Tova and all that, and I learned those few words, because why not? So my mother's mother, my grandmother, I think came from Dresden, and my grandmother was non-Jewish, completely non-Jewish. But she had married, my mother was racially, again, using that 50% non-Aryan, because her father, although he was not an atheist, he was an agnostic. And, but he too was of Jewish blood and origin. He incidentally was a famous, he was one of the chief journalists of a very liberal and well-known German newspaper. One could probably compare it with the Times. He was a music critic, and he wrote the financial page as well. How the two met together, I never met him. He died 2 weeks before I was born.
Now, so were the family generally not religious then?
No.
I mean, agnostic,
no.
Or were they just not...
No. No, I mean, one did not observe any festivals except Christmas, of course. With we just had this... It was of no importance.
How important was it the cultural aspect? Because you don't have to be religious to follow certain customs.
No, it was social.
Did you follow the dietary?
No, nothing at all. It was dietary. One of my, to give you an example, which is amusing, I had my father's eldest sister, Elsa, who was actually... She wrote two novels, and she was a professor at the Institut Français, the French Lycée. She celebrated Christmas by having the traditional Christmas tree, but in deference to her Jewish blood, she put the Star of David on top. That says it all.
Now, in the early days, this is before Hitler came to power, so when you're basically, coming just over teens, were you aware of any anti-Semitism in Berlin? I mean, Berlin was supposed to be more liberal, generally, towards foreigners, so to speak.
You're quite right.
Were Berlin? You aware of any trouble before Hitler in Berlin for Jewish people, or so-called Jewish,
Not really, because it was very much hidden. And my family, of course, as soon as I was 12 or 13, the whole of my family thought that this ulcer called Hitler would never last, would never attain power, and certainly wouldn't proceed in the manner in which he did.
So you were aware of his... operations,
yes,
before he came to power, but you thought they would come to naught, that eventually he'd be exposed.
This was my parents' opinion, of course, and they instilled in me the sort of thing. Oh, they dismissed him as a lunatic. Big mistake.
So tell me a bit more about the school. How did your education progress then?
We had if I may now come to the year, say, 1933, things did change, not dramatically, but quite interestingly. We had the usual assembly in front of the Warriors Memorial, and I noticed that our teachers were divided in their attitude. You could find out which of them was a Nazi and an ardent member because they wore the swastika, and I noticed the others who came into the classroom and said good morning and not Heil Hitler. To us, this was extremely interesting. My Jewish friends of course, did not participate in certain ceremonies. And in 1934, our very nice, liberal, democratic headmaster was retired. We had a new headmaster. His name was Dr. Quandt.
A very Quant or
Quandt. He at that time we had no idea of the significance of that name. We found out later that Dr. Goebbels, the minister of propaganda, had married Margaret Quandt. He was related, I think Goebbels was either his brother-in-law, but he was related to that. He He was an ardent Nazi, and he became and a lot of yes, he was unpleasant. His tirades, you know, about German nationalism and all that became more and more violent. And my parents then decided that it was high time. This was 1934-35, that it was time to get me out.
And can I just talk a bit more? What about, Hitler came to power in
33.
Now, that, in a sense, was a sign that you were the family was wrong. I mean, you know.
Well, absolutely. Yes.
What immediate impact did it have? I mean, it had an impact on school that you've described.
Yes.
What other impacts did the Hitler rise to power have?
Yes.
Because I think it was quite quick, some elements of what happened.
Yes.
What did you notice? And I know you were only 13, you know, but...
14. You see, this insidious anti-Semitism and was, in a way, it was done in such a way that you sort of hardly noticed it. It was sort of like, you know... If you cook chicken soup, you let it simmer. It was simmering, but it was not boiling.
What kind of things
were
they slowly?
Well, I noticed at the age of 14, there was a boy called Krüger, Hans Krüger, who always invited me to his. He was, of course, a very blonde like myself, and his father was an architect, and they were a German family, and I was invited to his birthday parties, and that suddenly stopped. It stopped. The Krugers. At school, we did not notice it so much because we still had quite a number of Jewish. In 1934-35, people didn't emigrate so much. There were still a lot of Jewish pupils. They were not really discriminated against. In fact, in our class, we had two of the brightest boys were Jewish. They could continue in 1935, in 1936. But it became obvious that certain of the boys withdrew from those mixed friendships.
Now, before you left in Germany, did you have any big interests? Because obviously you're going to leave in 34, 35. Did you have any hobbies or particular pursuits that you were on, Boy Scouts or whatever?
Yes. Well, my father was a great sportsman and an oarsman, and I joined at the age of 13 a rowing club. In East Berlin, I had to go there every Sunday morning, and I became quite competent. And I was a member of the same rowing club where my father was one of the founder members. We went skiing. I've always been a very keen skier, and that's as far as the sports were concerned. We participated in all the other sports, of course, at school. And in 1935, just before I left, I noticed during the gym class, our gym teacher gave us a wooden kind of missile. It was round at the end and had a handle. And he asked us to throw that thing. It is called a Panzerfaust, which is a thing.
It's the stick grenade, hand grenade shape.
Hand grenade shape. 1935. Hitler had marched into the Rhineland, and that's when we knew that the writing is on the wall. My father at the same time got not an Iron Cross, but got another reward for having been in World War I in 1935. So it was incongruous. It was a little bit mad. In some respects, he was honored, and others, he was persecuted. I left out the part that in April 1933, when all the Jewish shops were boycotted, my father's studio, which had a shop, was also, you know, somebody stood in front of it. He didn't really. I mean, people still walked in and out of the shop. It was
now how long did that boycott last for?
It was only a day. It was 24 hours.
So not much. But his business carried on then.
The business carried on. In fact, it improved.
Did you have the interest in music? You mentioned it earlier that your family was music. Can you talk a bit about that?
Music, yes. Because of Aunt Louise, who had a box in the Berlin Philharmonie, which was a big concert hall, we were sometimes allowed to attend concerts. Being from a musical family, I had to learn and play the piano. I had to at the age of 4, and I had a music teacher who was a rather old-fashioned and old lady, and she was, to my mind, not a good teacher, because she was also a very strict disciplinarian. And I found at the age of 5, when I was playing a little Mozart sonata with my 2 hands, she took a sharpened pencil and pushed it into my right hand and saying, "Your hand, the position of your right hand is too low. You should have it up." That pencil broke, and I still have a piece of pencil in my right hand. The sad part was it put me off playing the piano. I mean, I still do. We've got one here, and I play Baba Black Sheep for my grandchildren. That's as far as it goes. I was allowed, of course, to go to concerts, and they chose usually children. They chose usually concerts of child prodigies, and I do remember at the age of 8 or 9 that I saw Yehudi Menuhin perform the Beethoven violin concerto wearing a green velvet suit with short trousers. It impressed me no end. But it was quite an event. Of course, as you know, he became one of the greatest musicians. He was approximately my contemporary. He died a few years ago.